Today we want to invade another crucial area, frequently neglected in the parenting process, namely sex education in the home. Dr. Donald W. Hastings, professor of psychiatry at the medical school at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, wrote an interesting editorial in which he made this statement. To those who feel that sex education should be given by parents in the home, one can make a clear-cut reply. It is. It is not a question of whether the child learns about sex and develops attitudes toward it during the early years of life. Rather, it is a question of the form it takes, and to borrow an educator's phrase, the content of the curriculum. Even if sex is never mentioned in the home and is swept under the rug, this conspiracy of silence, too, will create attitudes that will become set in concrete, essentially unchanged by later formal education. Ladies and gentlemen, we cannot continue to be silent about that which is saturating our society. We cannot continue to be ashamed to discuss what God was not ashamed to create. I want to begin with a basic proposition that will underlie everything I have to say. And it's this. Sex education is primarily and ideally the parent's responsibility. The parents are the best qualified to give this kind of education, but frequently very poorly equipped. I'm particularly encouraged today because there are quite a few grandparents in the audience. And I want to say categorically, you are among the most significant people on planet Earth, particularly in this area. It is my judgment that grandparents are frequently the best equipped and qualified to give this kind of education. It's my experience that oftentimes children, even young people, would rather go to their grandparents than to their parents for this kind of information. The question is, are you able to help? I'd like to help you to be able to help. Oh, I know there are many people, particularly in the evangelical community, who are convinced that only ignorance assures innocence. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Bible has a great deal to say about human sexuality. It never feeds your prurient interests, but it always gives it in a value context, and never with embarrassment. So let me suggest some principles you might care to jot down. We'll try to spell them out for you. That you as a parent, as a grandparent, need to be appraised of and utilized in the process of your family life education. Principle number one, a child must experience from birth a warm but not a smothering relationship with both parents. Let me repeat that. A child must experience from birth a warm but not a smothering relationship with both parents. Now, to help you understand this, let's draw a diagram. Here are two very significant individuals in any family. Let this X represent the husband. Let this X represent the wife. God brings them into a one-flesh relationship in marriage. Now, how can you function adequately in that kind of a relationship? Well, we are convinced that from a spiritual point of view, there is a third partner. There is the Lord. And the dynamic of your relationship to your partner is always determined by the dynamic of your relationship with the Lord. That's why I say to a husband, to a wife who comes to me for counseling, look, your primary problem is not your partner. Your primary problem is your Lord. And the closer this man comes to the Lord, and the closer this woman comes to the Lord, the closer they come to each other. In fact, I am so convinced of this that if I ever find myself out of fellowship with Jean, my wife, I can automatically conclude I'm out of fellowship with Jesus Christ. And my first responsibility is not to get back into fellowship with her, but to get back into fellowship with Him. Because only then do I have the freedom to say, sweetheart, forgive me. I'm sorry. I blew it. I acted in the flesh. Now let's add two other individuals as a sample of a family. Let's let this one represent a boy born to that marriage. Let's let this one represent a girl born to the same marriage. And we've known for years that this relationship, the relationship of this boy with his father, is one of the most significant relationships that boy will ever sustain. You see, it's from his father that he gets the idea of what it means to be masculine, and that's very important in our perverted society. You see, you are compelled to live in a generation that is masculinizing women and feminizing men with devastating results. Humanly speaking, I am not convinced we can survive the devastation of that perversion. Where does a boy come to appreciate what it means to be a man? By relating to the most significant man who ever moves into his life. It's from that man he learns what it means to be a father. That's his role model. It's from that man he understands what it means to be a husband. And I tell you very directly, it really makes very little difference what that man says to that boy about sex. It makes all of the difference in the world how that man relates to that woman. That's the most significant sex education that boy will ever receive. So if that man is very thoughtful, very tender, very gracious, very loving to that woman, he is giving that boy the greatest sex education he could ever get from any source. For your information, over 35 years of counseling ministry, I have never seen a pervert come out of that kind of home. Now, we've known also that it's very important for this girl to relate positively to her mother. Because after all, it's from her mother that she gets the idea of what it means to be feminine, of what it means to be a mother, of what it means to be a wife. And, you know, if every time the monthly cycle rolls around, she hops into bed, everything comes unglued in the home, the curse is upon us. And this girl grows up in a home hating the day she ever showed up on planet Earth as a woman. And I'm here to tell you she's going to have some of the most serious problems in her marriage that it's possible to have. I would say the most difficult cases of counseling I have ever had is women who have a feminine protest or men who have a masculine protest, who hate the fact that they are a man, who cannot function that way, who hate the fact that they are a woman and who cannot function that way, and in every case they picked it up in their home. Now, there's another relationship that's very delicate, so I want you to listen very carefully because this is where we get into trouble. It is not only important for that boy to relate to that father, it is also important for that boy to relate, but not to over-relate to that woman. And when that boy becomes a mama's boy, we're in trouble. We're in trouble not only in terms of that boy's life, but we are already in the process of setting up a troubled marriage. Because what could be worse to a woman than to be married to a mama's boy, who frequently marries a woman, not because he's looking for a wife, but because he's looking for a substitute mother. And I would say to you women very categorically, every time you relate to your boy, you want to do everything humanly possible to magnify that boy's masculinity. Now what happens, you know, is most women get scared to death, my boy don't play football. You know, and they finally screw up enough courage because Pop drafts bags into the stadium, and every time the kids hit the ball, you know, boom, they go underneath and come up as he's still alive. Kid wants to go away to camp. Oh, we can't send him to camp, a lady said to me some time ago. Oh, Professor Hendricks, I can't send my boy to camp. I said, why not? I said, that's the greatest thing that happened. No, he'll never make it. I said, lady, we won't have any problem with him. Our only problem is with you. So I looked to her husband, I said, sir, I want to give you an assignment. So I want you to see to it that this boy goes to camp for a week. I really think the guy enjoyed the assignment. So mom packed, you know, 7 sets of underwear in the kid's suitcase. Kid went away to camp, comes back at the end of the week, all 7 sets still in the suitcase. She's got to peel off the original ones. Greatest thing that ever happened to the kid. I repeat, anything you can do to underscore the masculinity of your son, when you as a mother say to your boy, son, mommy is so proud of you. Did you do that by yourself? That is the way you are developing a young man who's going to make the finest candidate for some young lady as a husband. It's important for this girl to relate, but not to over-relate to her father. If I ever had you in my office and you actually saw right in front of your eyes and heard with your ears what women pour into my ears, you would never recover. I have had women come to me who have the most serious sexual problems it's possible to have, absolutely unable to relate to a husband because they overrelated to a father. And they can't transfer their sexual feelings to the proper object. Now you say, how in the world does this woman overrelate to the son and this father overrelate to that girl? Let me tell you. When this father stops loving that woman, and that woman stops enjoying the satisfaction of his love, then they will start over-relating to their children. That's why I get scared spitless every time I hear a man talking to me about his little girl. But all the time in a conversation, he never mentions his big girl. Hear me. You will never produce a pervert in a home where that child always knows that he or she is number 2. Never number 1. Your father is number 1 in this outfit. Your mother is the most significant person God ever put together. And a little kid who grows up in that kind of a home, get the best preparation for marriage you've ever had, he's ever had. Now, just to complete it, because I can see some of you sitting there asking, what about this relationship? You know, my girls fight with boys, and my boys fight with girls. Do your kids fight with each other? They don't do that out in Amarillo? I'm sure glad you never came to Dallas, especially showed up in our home. 4 kids, 2 girls, 2 boys. Man, we had knockdown, drag-out sessions. We refought the Civil War so many times. In the morning, 2 against 2. In the afternoon, they switched sides. And we said, oh, my kids fight. I say, fantastic. That's wonderful preparation for marriage. You see, that's like a good rock polishing machine. Nothing like getting a fire engine in your head to deliver you from self-centeredness. And by the way, it's just a statistical fact that some of the best marriage partners in all of the world come from very large families. You're not self-centered people. It's a question of survival. Let's face it. Now, let me add one other thing to this. You want to prepare your children for marriage, then focus on your marriage. So you get your act together as a couple, and I'll guarantee you, you will never miss in terms of preparing those kids. The greatest love you give to your children is the overflow of your relationship as a couple. And I think I've come to the place where I've lived long enough that I can tell from children, sexually well-adjusted couples. Because the overflow of the intimacy of that relationship will always be reflected in the life of those kids. And by the way, I hope you're not ashamed to express your love publicly. I'm talking about in front of your kids. Now, don't evaluate this on the basis of the kids. Man, that'll blow you apart. Especially if they're teenagers. Because every time you embrace it, oh no, here we go again. Tongue thickening. My wife and I were embracing in the living room a number of years ago, and my son Bill came plowing through the front door with his buddy from down the street. And he said, ah, good night. We're going to have to wait a minute. This kid says, how come? Ah, I see my parents are in there smooching again. This kid says, great, let's go in. Ah, I said, it always goes on in our house. Boy, his little kid looks Bill straight in the eye and says, boy, Bill, must be fantastic to have a father that loves your mother. I don't even know who my father is. Every night, we got a different guy in that house. It must be fantastic to have a father that loves your mother. And a little kid who grows up in a home where he takes that for granted gets a liberal arts education crammed right down the center of his throat. See, I know what I'm talking about. I've been down this road four times. I know what it is to have teenagers say, boy, I'll tell you, I can hardly wait to get out of here. Say, great, that's mutual. Boy, I'll tell you, when I get out, I'm not coming back. You know, great, is that a promise? My gal goes off to Texas Tech, you know, and boy, she's not about to come back, and she's hardly there a week. Hey, Daddy, this is your daughter at college. You know, as if I had 40 of them out there. You wouldn't mind if I come home, would you? Ladies and gentlemen, I don't understand all I know. I just know that the harder you get a grip on your kids, the more they want to split. And the more you let them go, the more they want to come back. If they're coming back to a mom and dad who are incurably and unashamedly in love. You want to give your kids good sex education? Best way to do it is strengthen the quality of your relationship as a couple. No greater heritage. Well, there's a second principle I want to add to this. Ah, this is a biggie. Help each child to identify himself with his own sex, as well as respecting the opposite sex. Help each child to identify himself with his own sex while respecting the opposite sex. Now, my friend, sex is more than the act of sex. It's more than the process of reproduction. It involves your total sexuality. Whether you are comfortable with the fact that you are a man, whether you are comfortable with the fact that you are a woman. It's a great thing to teach a child that it's not better to be a boy or better to be a girl, but it's better to be what God created you to be and to be fulfilled in that particular role. So, don't put down the opposite sex. Nobody appreciates humor more than I do. I think I was born with a funny bone that never could get quite adjusted. I just enjoy laughter. I have always been involved in some way or other with Young Life, and the thing that has always excited me is to bring a group of kids into a Young Life club or up here to one of the ranches, and man, they're going to have the time of their life. They're going to laugh till their sides are sore. And they're going to get a new identification with Christianity. Because they tend to think, you know, that a Christian is a person, you know, who's got one foot on a banana peel and the other one in the grave. And they're going to get a whole new image of what it means to be a Christian. So I deeply appreciate humor. But there is a sick brand of humor. And that's the husband who's chipping away at his wife before his children. Or a wife who's kind of slicing away with a series of so-called subtle put-downs. You know, it's the husband who comes home and says, well, what burnt offering are we having for dinner tonight? You know, which really develops a Betty Crocker. Or, you know, she's putting on her makeup and he walks by the mirror and says, well, that's an exercise in futility. Or the dear woman, you know, whose husband decides, you know, to play it dangerously and decide to play baseball with the kids. And his wife is saying, well, we're going to watch Mr. Spastic in action now. Have you ever sat in a conversation group where a woman or a man is being put down by their partner? I want you to know that every time you have experienced that, you have seen the sickest brand of humor you will ever be exposed to. In fact, those people are telling you something they never want to tell you. And the man, you know, is the master with the needle. And I'd say to you, gentlemen, as a man, if you want to make significant steps forward in your marriage, in your family, just eliminate all forms of sarcasm. That's like pouring sulfuric acid on a relationship. You know, I'm so glad for a father who taught me some basic things. You know what my father taught me? My father taught me the greatest respect for women that I think it was possible to give to a child. I think my father would beat my two eyes into one if he ever saw me touch a woman. He used to say to me over and over again, in my judgment, the most yellow man in America is the man who hits a woman. And yet the number one problem in America today is the battering syndrome. And by the way, if you think it's just men with women, you got another thought coming. It's fast coming up on the inside. It's battering women who are beating guys into unconsciousness. See, homicide is one of the highest incidents of divorce. I mean, of murder in our cities today. And I've spent a lot of time with police, and the one thing they hate to go on more than anything else is a call where they got marital difficulty. Now, I'll never forget the first time I walked into one with a policeman. He said, now, I want you to stay out of this thing, and I want you to stay close to the door where you can take off. And he said, I want you to keep your eye on this woman. Because here's a woman who calls in. She is being beaten to a pulp by her husband. And the moment the policeman comes in to break it up, she clubs the policeman. See, it's interesting. All of the crazy phenomena that we develop in this perverted society because we move away from the fact that God created me as a man, God created me as a woman, and that's where I find my greatest fulfillment. Not as a woman trying to become a man, not as a man trying to become a woman, but to become what God has called me to be. And your task is to magnify the maleness of that boy and the femaleness of that girl. I hope you guys take your little gals in your hand and look them straight down the eyeballs and say, man! My greatest claim to fame is that I'm your father. I never forget saying to Bev one day, my younger daughter, Bev, I want you to know I get the greatest privilege in the world. She said, really, Dad, what's that? I'm your daddy. She looked me straight in the eye and said, boy, you're lucky. You better believe it. And every time you women can take that little guy and put your arm around him and say, I'm so proud to be your mommy. You are developing an innate pride in that child's own sexuality. And by the way, make sure you magnify your husband before your children, women. And make sure you magnify your wife before your children, men. I think the most exciting thing in my life came a number of years ago when my older boy Bob said to me, "Hey, Dad, do you think there are any women left like Mom around?" You see that old song we used to sing, you know, "I want a girl just like the girl that married dear old Dad," is telling you something very significant. That's telling you that a kid came up with a home in which he saw a role model as a mother and said, "Man, that's the kind of woman I want to marry. Who's going to provide that kind of relationship?" Well, there's a third principle I want to give you, and that is furnish sex information coupled with Christian interpretation. See, there are two things that you give in a sex education program. One is information. That's the easiest thing to give, facts. But the second thing you give is interpretation. That has to do with your values. And that's what parents are best equipped to give. See, a kid can get his facts from any reliable source. He can get a good book. He can listen to a doctor who is wonderfully capable of giving him all of the factual information he needs. But where is he going to get the interpretation? Where is he going to get the Christian perspective and value system concerning his sexuality? Now I'll put a couple things under this so you think it through. Because you see, you've got to bear in mind that the bulk of sex education that a child is exposed to today, he gets from his peers who don't know any more or as much as he knows. He gets it from the street. He gets it from the screen, television, movies, the most perverted form of human sexuality that it's possible to pick up. More distortions per square inch on the average television screen or in a movie than you will get through any other source. So you can't rely on the media to give either the information or the interpretation to your children. This is why people always say to me, "Well, you know, Brother Hendricks, we are in the most sexually enlightened generation." I say, "I got news for you. It's not the most sexually enlightened, it's the most sexually exposed. And they are not the same." In fact, almost every year goes by, authorities in this field come out with the fact that ignorance concerning the basic facts of sexuality continues to rise with all of the information that's available. So I want to give you a couple things that will help. Number one, will you please use correct vocabulary? I get so weary of people constantly referring to their gong gong. What in the world is a gong gong? Someday I'm going to write a book on this. I'm going to give all of the names that people give to sexual organs. I mean, it's going to be a bestseller. See, if your kid comes up to you, you know, real small, and puts his fingers on your nose and says, "What's that?" You don't say, "That's a boo-boo." You say, "That's a nose. N-O-S-E, nose, look at nose." Until finally understands what it is. But the interesting thing is we're always using this veiled kind of language as if there were something wrong with calling the parts of the human body by their appropriate name. Secondly, answer all questions honestly. I wonder when we're going to get off the stork routine. You know, we kid a lot about it, but you know, interestingly enough, that's still very prominent in the culture. Like the little kid comes into his mother and says, "Mommy, where was I?" Well, she tells him about the stork brought him. And he's fed up with that. So he goes to Grandma. "Grandma, where did I come? Where did you come from?" "Well, you know, the stork brought me." She's got a longer story to tell him. And finally, dear old great-grandma comes along. And he thinks, "Boy, she'll give me the straight story. Great-grandma, where were you born? How were you born?" And she tells him the story of the stork. And the little kid goes out to his buddy in the street and says, "You know, there hasn't been a normal birth in our family for three generations." You know, it's a wonderful thing to grow up in a home where a kid knows, if I want the straight story, I go to Dad. I go to Mom. I can still remember saying to my kids, who would come with all of this stuff that they would pick up in a community, I'd say, look, let me sit down and give you the straight story as to what's involved in it. And at the end of it, I would always say, look, I want you to know, if you really want to know the straight scoop, you come to me. I'll never tell you a lie. You know, I think one of my greatest satisfactions as a parent of grown children is that my four children can look back to the fact that Gene and I, no matter what the question, would sit down and say, here's the straight scoop. You see, where else are they going to get it? Now, a third thing I want to suggest is always tell the truth, but not necessarily all of the truth. You know, your kid, usually around the dinner table when you have your friends over, will just blurt out right in the middle, hey, Mommy, where did babies come from? So you go, oh, my shattered nerves. Here's my opportunity to tell the story, and, you know, you make one good statement, and the kid says, what are we having for dessert? Because that's just as normal as him asking, why does it rain? And why do things happen scientifically to which he's exposed? The little boy asks his mother, Mommy, where did I come from? So she figures this is the opportunity. She sits down, gives him all of the facts of life. The kid's bored to tears, wiggling on the chair. When she finally gets through her little speech, he said, oh, thanks a lot, but where do I come from? Johnny down the street comes from Minneapolis. Where do I come from? See, it's very important that you think behind the question. What does the child really want to know? You don't have to tell him everything, but never tell him anything that you will have to change. You don't tell him all of it, but all that you tell him should be accurate. A fourth suggestion I give you under this is avoid any suggestion of shame or guilt. By the way, you know where this starts? It usually starts with toilet training. Most of us as parents are very uncomfortable with that. Now, this is a fact of life. There is no one who does not go through this process. And yet the average parent gets bent out of shape over toilet training. And man, we got to get this boy trained. And we make ourselves as well as the kid neurotic over the process. I said to a lady some time ago, relax, lady. Get off the kid's back. Maybe he'll get trained. He's got to be trained. Kid's month, a year and 1 month, and she's been out of shape. I said, let me ask you a simple question. You know anybody that's an adult who isn't trained? You run into anyone? I said, relax. They all make it. And it's interesting sometimes how it comes about. Boy, I've seen many a kid, you know, Mom, just absolutely pull their remaining hairs out trying to get the kid trained. And he goes off to a nursery school one day, and boy, the kids, we put a diaper on him. That's the last time the kid's got a leaking connection. Gets trained very, very rapidly. But you see, every time your child asks you a question, I hope you don't get red and crawl under the table. The reason we do that is that most of us are not too comfortable about our own sexuality. That's why we can't even discuss the subject. For your information, the majority of kids who come out of Christian homes have one lament. I could never talk to my parents about the subject. And that's a tragedy, because I happen to believe you have the most to contribute to that child. So when your child asks you a question that's very personal in this area, why don't you sit down and congratulate him for asking that kind of a question? I'm so proud of you that you asked me that question. And by the way, parents often say to me, well, you know, I can't answer all of these questions. That's no hassle. Just tell them, I don't know. But boy, that's a good question. I'm going to find an answer for you. So you never wipe a kid out. Have you ever been to college or university? You ever have a professor that you ask a question and he says, well, inasmuch as whereupon they're from, as it were, and a number of scholars also agree.
You know, I now know he doesn't know the answer. Greatest professor I ever had in my life. An internationally known Greek authority was asked a question by a freshman in a class that I was attending, and he said, young man, that's the most perceptive question I've been asked in 37 years of teaching. And if I gave you an answer, it would be very superficial. I'll study it, and I'll get you an answer. Any other good questions? Man, that guy's stature went right up in that book, because all of us had been exposed to all kinds of fraud who didn't have the security to say, I don't have an adequate answer for that. So don't be embarrassed that you don't have. They don't expect you to be the world's leading expert in the field of human sexuality. They do believe that you ought to be honest and you ought to be interested. Now let me give you a fourth one. And this is a very delicate one, and it's a very difficult one, and it's one that you are going to have to face as no other generation ever had to face. So, a lot of us haven't been down this road before. Provide instruction regarding sexual deviance. And I'll put three or four things under that to help you. We need, ladies and gentlemen, an antidote to the increase of sexual propaganda in our society. And it's pouring out in droves. See, don't let somebody else set your sexual standards for your children. You do that. First of all, I hope you teach your children about homosexuality and its devastation. Now, I know this is not too popular, and particularly in a public audience, but I'm here to tell you, you better prepare your kids at home. Because the bulk of people who are hooked by homosexuality are hooked when they are in their 9, 10, 11, and 12 years. That's the time they are exposed, unfortunately, many times in a camping program, many times in a Boy Scout program or Girl Scout program, some place where they are exposed to an individual who has this disease and who infects this kid. Every child goes through a period of latent homosexuality. He will not become that unless he is exposed to that as an alternate lifestyle. And I don't need to tell you, we are fast coming to the place in America, if your kid is going to a public school, he is going to be taught, as he is now being taught in most public school systems of America, that homosexuality is a viable alternative lifestyle. So you better prepare him for this. Second, don't forget to inform your children, particularly your younger ones, about the danger of taking a ride with a stranger. My friend, we don't need any more Atlanta. One of the saddest spectacles on the American scene. I still can hardly believe that this thing has been going on that long with the FBI and all of the police force concentrating on it and still trying to find. And I guess recently they have at least a clue. See, there are all kinds of individuals. Now, I say this is delicate because obviously you don't want to prepare a kid so that the kid is neurotic, so the kid is so anxious that, you know, he cannot get involved in legitimate activities with people. But the realism of the matter is, there are people out for your kids. And you better let them know. The time to give them the information is not after they've been picked up and gone through the trauma of that kind of an experience and eventually come back to your home. Third, I hope you inform your children about the devastation of pornographic literature. Ladies and gentlemen, these merchants of menace are pouring out a stream of filth into our culture that almost makes you embarrassed to be an American. Interesting, traveling around the world now in over 66 different countries to find how many countries, third world countries, so-called developing countries, that have the most stringent laws against pornographic literature. And you'll never find that stuff on their newsstand. Come back to America, get off a plane, man, it smacks you between the eyes. And for your information, 75 to 80% of the pornographic literature in America ends up in the hands of kids under 18. and to give you a warning. It usually comes through the mail. That's the way kids get hooked on it. Do you ever read magazines that give you an advertisement for bodybuilding? They give you advertisement for things that are appealing to a little boy or maybe to a little girl. And you look at the price and you say, send a dollar for that? You've got to be kidding. Why, that's worth more than a dollar. My friend, that's a ruse. That's a trap. That whole program is subsidized. They can't get that for a dollar. Pornographic individuals will pay $2 or $3 for every name they can get. And that's the way they get them. If you don't want pornographic literature to come into your home, I can still remember the junk that arrived on my front door one day. I couldn't believe where that garbage had come from. And I went over to see the postmaster, who was a friend of mine, and he said, well, Howie, I'll tell you how to get rid of it. He said, we got a form here, and you can pick it up in any post office in America. Just remember, if you go to ask them, it's going to take them 3 days to find it. It's way back there in the file, you know, down in the section where it's all closed off and the lights burned out, and he forgot the combination. But don't get off their back till they get it. And you can fill out that form, and you will never get a piece of pornographic literature in the mail today, because that is the only leverage we've got to attack them. And once that name gets on the list, believe me, you won't get it. Because they go over, a guy who was saved out of this thing told me, they go over those lists sometimes 12, 15 times to make sure that that name is not on that list. Because they know they're hung if it is. The fourth thing I think you need to educate your children about living in this society is abortion and venereal disease. I am amazed at how many kids get an abortion. Christian kids. And I ask them, why did you go this route? Answer, my mother insisted on it. So you happy with the decision? I'm absolutely grossed out by the decision. Here's this little gal covered over with guilt because either her mother never prepared her for this, or once it happened, she was so insecure she couldn't relate. If ever a child needed the support of parents, it's when they get messed up sexually. Venereal disease. Our doctor friends here can give it to you straighter than I can give you. It's in epidemic proportion in America. The highest incidence of medical problems on the university campus. I have been informed by doctors who serve there. A fifth principle. Surround your child with good sex education literature. I think you ought to have literature related to sex education that is around your home and available to your children, just like you have literature concerning any other field. And by the way, there's some good literature. One of the best series that you can pick up is put up out by the American Medical Association. And if you're in a church, it'll be wonderful if you got a doctor to write away to Dearborn Street in Chicago and got a number of sets. That material is not only physiologically and medically correct, but it's done in the finest taste. It is graded material, starting with a very small child, explaining to him, and coming all the way up the line till you finally have something to prepare a couple for marriage. There is also an excellent series put out by Concordia Press, which gives a Christian interpretation to human sexuality that's fabulous. It, too, is graded. We've had those things in our home as long as I can remember. We have gone through 3 and 4 bindings on the little books to put them back together again. Because, you see, a kid reads it naturally and normally, and as in any kind of education, this is a process of building, of a growing understanding of what's involved. But it becomes very normal and very natural. And if your child is very young, you ought to read to the child. What a better way to introduce him. You are telling him, look, I am not ashamed to discuss what God was not ashamed to create. So you are welcome to come to me. I initiated the subject. The last principle I want to suggest to you is that both parents should be involved in sex education. Ideally, they ought to be working together as a team. Nothing is a more invincible combo. That I can go to my father, I can go to my mother. And I'm always going to get the straight stew. Neither one of them has been out of shape that I bring up the subject. They are both so comfortable with their own sexuality that they are very free to help me as I'm in this developmental stage. But a young lady said to me some time ago, my parents and I live by the grace of a silent agreement. No real question, no real answer. That, in my judgment, is tragic beyond words. I want to read a statement to you that has really been working me over lately because I deal with the end product of this. With America's emphasis on sex, it isn't any wonder that even very young people come to believe that sexual gratification is the pearl of great price. Worth the exchange of all other treasures. Unfortunately, by the time many of them find out that other treasures are highly valuable also, it's too late. They have thrown them away on somebody who doesn't know diamond from rhinestone. And all you got to do is to sit down with a little guy or a little gal who've really trashed up their life to know there's got to be a better way. See, when God Almighty in the commandment said, thou shalt not commit adultery, he wasn't trying to ruin your sex life. He was trying to preserve it for the purpose for which he created it. And I happen to believe that in years to come, you will look back if you have prepared your children to live in this kind of a society with a biblical understanding of human sexuality, you will look back with the deepest satisfaction that you gave your kids what many Christian parents have never given their kids. They had it to give, but they stuttered when they should have spoken. And my heart beats for you. Men and women who are committed to Jesus Christ and who really want to see your children and your grandchildren grow up to bring great glory to God. And I would enlist your support to get deeply involved in it. I hope you are doing something in your church about this because there are many parents who will never hear a message like this unless somehow they are exposed to it. But remember that a church providing sex education, or a school providing sex education, or any other agency providing sex education is not an adequate substitute for a parent. You will provide the best sex education your children ever receive.